and he just got up off the treatment bed and walked back to his room. And as he was walking back to his room, Roy was just shouting down the corridor, "You're a fucking prick. You've been all your life."
I've never heard so much rubbish in my life. Why do we have to listen to that garbage? It's just utter nonsense what he's talking about.
Well, the only thing that they have got is the big boy up front, Sigurdsson, who really, Sigurdsson.
Oh, my word. My
So where is his record?
Hang on.
Where has he achieved anything? 20 years ago?
Well, it would be a long time.
25 years ago? Why are we going for him, John?
I mean, what's he going to do with all his Irish jerseys now? Does he take them together and burn them? A collection of Irish jerseys. What does he do with them? And there he goes and puts on a white jersey.
And, of course, Celtic.
I agree with you.
Ronnie just wants to say the word Schweinsteiger.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Well, lads, what a weekend. We're here on the football show after one of the most dramatic Saturday evenings I can remember. The big question everybody across the country was asking was, can those little lads in the green and gold upset the sky blue giants? And sure enough, they did. Norwich City beating Man City. Gary Connaughton, Sean Meehan joined me, Mark Farley, on the football show. Lads, could you believe what you were seeing unfold before your eyes? History in the making.
No, I couldn't. I actually couldn't. I think me and Gary, who were both watching the match at the same time, were distracted by some other sport from some backwater that somebody played in one country. So we were
the most bitter Dublin person after a 5-in-a-row win I've ever heard.
He was shouting for Kerry.
I was shouting for Kerry. Just
were you actually shouting for Kerry?
Well, I figured out just before the match that at one time their kit manufacturer was Adidas, and that immediately puts you in my favourite county of all time list.
So we can show, you know, listeners now how much love Sean has for Gaelic football if a born and bred Dub decides to support Kerry randomly because Adidas make his football kits. If that's the kind of person that appeals to you, then you've come to the right place, because we're going to be talking strictly soccer for the rest of the show.
We can't be calling it that word as well. If we're going to call it the S word, we could just throw it out the window straight away.
I only do it to differentiate from the fact that we were talking about Gaelic football.
There's the differentiation.
We had this discussion last week when you were away as well. But coming up on the show, obviously we'll be chatting about City against Norwich. Sean, you missed last week, but you're back again this week, which we're going to call them match verdicts rather than play ratings. What would you call them? Obtuse? Verdicts.
Alternative.
For those who are listening for the first time, you'll understand what we mean when we get to them. You'll be going through a few of them games. We obviously have to talk about Arsenal being more Arsenal than Arsenal have ever been in the history of Arsenal with that 2-2 draw against Watford. Gary, you chatted to Michael Owen last week. We'll be playing some of the highlights from that interview. And because we are building up to Liverpool against Chelsea this weekend, we're going to have a special Liverpool versus Chelsea themed quiz, which is really interesting because Sean, you're a Chelsea fan, and Gary, you're a Liverpool fan. As a Liverpool fan, Gary, before we get to the quiz, you must have been happy enough with the fact that they are now, they've got the Premier League sewn up, and it's only the middle of September.
I just give them the trophy now. There's like no point even playing the rest of the season, I'd say, at this stage, to be honest. 5 points clear. They won't drop 5 points all season. Just forget about it. It's finished.
They are looking pretty impressive.
They are, like, yeah.
I'm looking at when are they going to possibly drop points, because they've got Chelsea this weekend, but that's going to be a rake of goals and Liverpool will inevitably win.
Yeah, that's one that I've earmarked as a great one for the neutral and Liverpool fans, because Liverpool are, everybody knows they're going into it, it's like, oh, there's going to be loads of goals, but Liverpool are winning. It's not like, oh, this could go either way, you know, there's a potential banana skin here. No, Liverpool are winning. They're not going to drop a point.
There was some worry against Newcastle on Saturday, obviously going 1-0 down, but they came back in good fashion. What was your match verdict for this one, Sean?
I went with satin shoes.
Satin shoes?
Satin shoes.
Out of 10.
Out of 10 for Bobby Firmino for his sultry assist for Liverpool's third goal?
Yeah.
Goal. Like, the man, his link-up play is just out of this world. And he just tries to pull off some form of skill, one bit of skill each match, which I don't think many players in the world could replicate, not least me on the five-a-side pitch this evening. God knows I'll try, though. God knows I will try. So I've given him satin shoes because it just feels as though his feet aren't really feet. They're not made of bone and meat. They're just made of like, I don't know, like some form of silk glove. It's just a lovely player to watch.
He tries it every game, and he tried it. He was in really in the form for it there on Saturday. He tried it, I'd say, about four or five times: back heels, side heels, front. Like, I don't even know what you call some of the stuff.
he's just pulling off things he's never seen before.
Like, the love for Firmino at the minute is, you can definitely no longer call him one of these players who's underrated. He's always like, oh, he's always the best player. Nobody's talking about.
He's so underrated now. He's possibly overrated.
Yeah. It's actually nearly gone the other way. Everybody seems to love him at the minute, and he's by far Liverpool's best player, according to a lot of people, forgetting about the likes of Salah, Van Dijk and Alisson. It's all about Bobby Firmino at the minute, but look, he deserves it. He's unselfish, you know, as they always say. He's in it for the team, is Bobby, so you can't really argue with them.
He pulls in for the collective.
Also a case in fantasy football that, I was going to say the Emperor strikes back, but he's never gotten to that status of emperor yet. Sadio Mane, he's doing bits again. I kind of laughed at all the people who suddenly decided that Mane was going to do more than Salah a few weeks ago, and then Salah went and got two goals against Arsenal. But Mane, in this sort of rivalry that the two have built up between each other, is back on business now, and he's possibly, Gary, an alternative to Salah at a cheaper price if you need to get somebody else in as well.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with Mane. He's just getting better all the time. It's actually frightening because I remember when Liverpool signed Mane, and whatever he cost, it was £34 million or something. People were like, why are they signing this lad? £34 million is absolutely crazy money. And now it's like, I know it's 3 years later or whatever, but he just keeps getting better and better and better. And he doesn't show any signs of stopping either. He's so good. And his finishing, like, he's probably nearly a better finisher than Salah now. Like, the goals he scores, he seems to love this one coming in off the left and just curling it into the top corner. He did it against Chelsea in the Super Cup. He did the one at the weekend, was nearly the exact same. It's absolutely outrageous. I don't even know what you can say about him now. He's just so good.
I'm just happy off the back of that Spurs game a few weeks ago that I didn't accidentally sign Joey Linton, because he's done feck all, damn all since.
Yeah.
But we mentioned that Norwich Man City game, obviously, at the opening of the show. Sean, I didn't see this game because I was watching that other sport that you don't want to talk about.
Whatever sport that is.
I saw the goals, all right, but give me a better sense of this. Was it a snatch and grab from Norwich, or were they actually, as a lot of people have been reporting, the better team?
If you score three goals against Man City, chances are, like, this is no smash and grab. You don't score three goals by accident.
Did I just call it a snatch and grab there? Sorry. It's been a long day. I was like, those two things make the same thing. Go on, smash and grab.
Well, either term. You don't score three goals by accident. They had a game plan for City. They pressed them high.
Otamendi might concede three goals by accident. Go on.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing. And they went 2-0 up with, you know, sort of a sweeping great move, especially for the second goal. Just a great move finished off by Todd Cantwell. Then City come back into it and you're like, ah, well, here we go. And they went 2-0 up and it was, you know, it was nice when it lasted, but this is Man City under Guardiola. They're going to just come and, you know, score four in the second half. But it didn't happen. And Norwich just continued to press, and Pukki should have scored. Before they scored the third goal, Pukki should have finished off a brilliant move. He just dragged it wide. And it's a good thing he dragged it wide, because then Man City got a goal kick and Nicolas Otamendi seemed to just fall asleep for what felt like an eternity. I don't understand how you can be so lax, like, for so long. It's like he had the ball and Emi Buendia just kind of like almost sort of went to go, like, just gave him a little shape up, and Otamendi just seemed, I don't know what he was looking at. I don't know what the East Anglian air was, just it just swarmed on him and he just lost his way. And then Buendia just, it was actually a bad ball for Pukki as well. Pukki did well to actually finish it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing how
Pukki's
he did it.
The best footballer in the world right now.
I'm telling you, it's a surprise. It's a surprise how he's not in the Scotland squad. It genuinely is. It's
he's finished, isn't he?
He's not finished. He's only 28.
Some people would be like, "Badum dum."
It's a joke that will never get old. But yeah, I think Norwich were full value for the win against City. But I think the highlight of it, rather than Pukki being the best player on earth or the second best striker in the Premier League and the world after Tammy Abraham, is Guardiola's post-match press conference, where the world of football Twitter has always been separate to the world of actual football. Actual football exists, and
it has been separate to the point where football clubs' Twitter accounts tried to get in on the crack.
Exactly.
And that's, I draw the line there, and that's happening, but I'd like to pretend it doesn't happen, but go on.
But there's also it also showcases a warped hierarchy that football Twitter should absolutely be subservient to actual Twitter. Is that not the whole point?
Yeah.
But instead, football clubs try to feed into it. But regardless, Pep Guardiola, since he first stepped foot off the plane, has been called a bald fraud by people on football Twitter. Now, not to say I agree, but that was
it's
what he's been
called. It's happened.
He was called a bald fraud. Fraudiola was the nickname gifted to him. And, you know, it's great to see that Pep recognised his nickname of Fraudiola in the post-match press conference. He said that his first season here, when nothing was going right and Chelsea won the league and everybody was like, well, what's this lad can't do it in England. You know, he had Barcelona and Bayern Munich. He was winning everything at a canter because he had all the best players. But you come to England, it's a bit more difficult. So they called me Fraudiola.
you do have to wonder how we've gotten to a point where Man City, who have been the best team in the world over the past 2 years, have now got to play a centre-half pairing of Nicolas Otamendi and John Stones, who are always ready to implode at a moment's notice. And that Otamendi thing at the
weekend. I was just thinking not to be telling people to stop listening to this podcast and go listen to another football podcast. But when you're finished this one, I would say that Eamon Dunphy's Premier League review show on The Stand today is going to be a doozy, because he's consistently drummed in the fact that he hates Man City's defence, that it's their biggest weak point. John Giles has always come to their defence. He's talked about how they barely conceded any goals last season. He's talked about how the fact that they always have the ball is a good enough defence. But now, Dunphy's going to be like the cat that got the cream. He's going to be insufferable. So I would probably say that's definitely worth listening to. I can't wait to check it out.
Yeah, there was an article in the English newspapers yesterday, and they're like, this game against Norwich proved why Guardiola had to be given another superstar centre defender during the summer. And then you're like, there has to be a point at which you have to stop just buying players. Like, you need to just, like, you know, do something. Like, obviously Laporte is a savage defender and he's going to be a miss to any team, but like, you can't go out and buy a £70 million centre back just because your other £60 million centre back got injured for a couple of months. Like, you can't just keep doing that. At some point you have to draw a line and just go with what
you have.
Remember,
like, Mangala?
Like, he only left this summer. He was paid $40 million for him.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of formula. Like, don't get me wrong, the journalist who wrote that and the sub editor that, you know, sort of created that headline, they're not wrong. You know, Pat's drew nil all with UCD at the weekend. Would I like a £70 million centre half? Probably. Actually, you know what, that wouldn't really make sense. We kept a clean sheet. But I'd certainly like one.
Yeah.
You know, if Milan Skriniar fancies a Gaffin D8, I could probably saw him out with one. But that's the kind of thing. It's like, how can you
sort someone out with a gaff in Dublin 8? Nobody, there's a housing crisis, Sean.
He meant a floor in his bedroom.
Oh, he can absolutely stay in my house. By the way, that is genuinely what happens sometimes, that somebody from the club is like, we have a spare bedroom, players have stayed in it. Yeah, I swear to God. Hey, that's how it works. That's how it works. They're different levels of football. But
you'll get there.
Exactly. It's like, Nicolas Otamendi costs what, like $30 million? Or maybe you'll just think that because he wears 30 on his back, and almost like he's shocked at how much somebody valued him at one point. Like, 30, yeah, million. I swear.
Man City's starting lineup cost $405 million, and Norwich's cost 6.5 million. And now that's even accounting for the fact that Laporte, who was 57 million, wasn't playing. So if you replace him with Otamendi, that's another 20 million onto it. And if you replaced Zinchenko, who was like 2 or 3 million, with Mendy, who would be playing if he wasn't constantly injured, that's another 50 million. So like, by right, the whole Norwich team wouldn't pay for one tenth of the defender that Man City didn't have.
What was your verdict for this game, Sean?
I went with Fraudiola. I felt as though it just said everything.
Yeah,
it said everything. Even though I don't necessarily agree with it, but I just appreciate how Pep has, I wouldn't say embraced it, but at least has acknowledged the fact that people were genuinely just calling him a ball fraud for about a year and a half.
He's took a step into our world.
Exactly.
Speaking of defenders losing the mind, David Luiz, I'm afraid to say, is at it again.
This is going to become a weekly segment for Mark Farrelly, I think.
Every Arsenal game I've watched so far this season, the final whistle has included David Luiz talking to an opposition player about why the foul he was committed on him wasn't a foul. It's incredible. I actually kind of felt sorry for him though on Sunday, because he stuck his leg out, went, oh no, maybe I shouldn't try and get the ball. That ball isn't there to be won. Then went, I know it is there to be won. Then kind of stuck his leg back in again and then tried to take it out again. But this, at the second time, it was too late.
Yeah. Again, me and Sean were in here watching it. And at the time, we were like, what was he doing? Because no matter what he did, like, he was already beaten before he even stuck out the leg. So he literally had nothing to gain from possibly doing it. But then, like, was always going to give away a penalty once he did try it. So it was David. I don't even know what you can say about David Luiz. It's been going on for 10 years now.
I like how Pereira, I'm sure, wasn't running as slow as me and Gary both saw him run. Like, everything was in slow motion and he was just gunning towards Luiz. And I was just kind of sat back in my seat like, oh, here we go. It's just a case of, is it going to be inside the box or outside the box? Like,
and it was like knee to thigh, even. It wasn't even, and the ball was on the ground.
Like, it worked. He was our first ever Scounder of the Week. I'm sure he's going to be nominated for Scounder of the Week this week again.
And
every week. It's great. We should call it the David Luiz Scounder of the Week Award. Yeah. But, like, he's the most Arsenal signing of all time. It's like, it's as if Arsenal looked at the club and went, how can we make this defence any more Arsenal? Let's buy David Luiz.
The most Arsenal, like, player on the market.
You know, people give out about Arsene Wenger. The year Arsene Wenger, and this is the team as a whole, not just Luiz, obviously, but the year Arsene Wenger, the Invincibles year, I think they conceded, I'm trying to remember the stats, someone had it on Twitter, they conceded 252 shots in the entire season. The worst they've ever done has been something like around 450 or something. So far, in 5 games in the Premier League this season, they've conceded over 90 shots.
That's just impressive.
Quick maths.
I think that, like,
that's 20 shots a game.
You know, there's such a thing as, like, there's a perfect marriage of when player meets club. Like, is David Luiz, like, the perfect marriage for, well, Arsenal's defence has always been shocking and it's always been brain dead. Why don't we give them somebody that's absolutely susceptible to do the exact thing that they are known for doing all the time? Because now, like, Watford got back into that match because Socrates Papastathopoulos did something that David Luiz would have done.
That was an impressive pronunciation. He didn't even flinch
around it. He have to do it to him sometimes. But, like, that's something that's like, oh yeah, just going to play this out for the back when there's 3 Watford players on little Guendouzi. Like, it was a stupid ball to play that shouldn't have been played in a million years. Like, what, and it's the same with Otamendi as well, just to bring it back to that match. It's like, there's no need for you to play it out from the back constantly. Otamendi's one was a different kettle of fish now. Yeah. He just fell asleep. But Socrates gets that ball. He has eyes. He can see down the pitch. He can see 3 Watford lads. They're wearing bright yellow, for Christ's sake. It's not like they can't see them. Like, yes. Knock it. Just knock it. I know. Listen, I'm sure Unai Emery won't be listening to this. But here, Unai, tell him to lock it long.
That was like the third time that they nearly got caught out a couple of times before that. And they just kept doing it. And it was like, well, I'd say Watford were like, just couldn't believe that they just kept trying it when it was so obviously wasn't working for them. Because this rule now, the goal kicker, where they're allowed into the box, teams almost feel obligated, oh, we have to play it short now. But like, it's, if you can't, if you have Socrates and David Luiz at the back, maybe pick your moments.
But this is the thing, like, Socrates isn't exactly a bad player. Like, he actually, last season, Jesus, for Arsenal centre halves, he was, you know, he was
Van Dijk,
Tony Adams-esque, like, it. But it just seems this season, it's like, oh, well, it's not that you have to be good, you just have to be not Mustafi. Like,
in terms of positive, like we said, over 30 shots they've conceded against Watford. Obviously lost a 2-goal lead. Should have been really, could have easily ended up in 3-2 Watford.
Yeah, probably. Jeez, should have been, to be honest.
Decore breakaway was fantastic. It was just so annoying.
It was brilliant because me and Gary were both like, Jesus, Decore's shot. He's no way.
He was nearly crawling around the pitch.
And then as soon as that break happened, he was just gone. Come on.
It was brilliant. But on a positive note, with regard to headbangers, Granit Xhaka didn't get a yellow card. So at least Arsenal fans have that. That's one thing you can take away from this.
He is a good man to pick up 16 yellow cards a season. I actually have a stat here about Arsenal, and I know it's going to be one close to Sean's heart. Now, I know they were playing Watford away, so Watford obviously wear yellow, so they couldn't wear it in this game. But I know how big of a fan Sean is, and to be fair, most football fans are, of the new Arsenal bruised banana kit.
Yeah.
So, 5 games played this season, they wore the kit once. They won, so they have a 100% win record wearing the bruised banana kit. 4 games they haven't worn it, they've only won once, so a 25% win
there
away.
You go.
Now, if that doesn't tell you a story, I don't know what story it tells you.
Listen, and you know, I hate to bring it back to the sport that should not be named, but if Kerry were wearing Adidas, they would have won the All-Ireland, and that's facts.
Last point on this Arsenal-Watford game, yet another day where Ceballos has done nothing. You might remember me a few weeks ago having a bit of a meltdown on the podcast because everybody was buying him in fantasy football, causing his price to rise from 5.5 million to 5.7 million. Well, I'd like to say to all those people who bought him, shove it up your arse. I'm delighted for you.
But you were going to buy him.
I was possibly going to buy him for the
Watford game. Also, this was going to be the game. Like, you were going to buy him after Arsenal had, you know, flattened the Spurs. And then his price would be like a tiny bit lower than what it was. Throw it in for the Watford game. He's going to do something. He did nothing.
Wait now, hold on. Possibly do something. I was talking about if you wanted a 5.5 midfielder who you were doing a wild card or whatever. And also my point was that he hadn't proven it enough to warrant buying him yet.
But in a sense, have these people who went out and bought him in the draws not saved you from yourself in that you would have had him in this
week? Wouldn't have bought him now at this stage because it would have been somebody else. Like, I would have bought John McGinn or someone ahead of him as time has proven
I think you're flip-flopping.
The entire... But my point wasn't about when that I was going to buy him. My point was that people shouldn't be buying him against ahead of Liverpool and Tottenham, which was completely right.
But why do you... If you weren't going to buy him, why do you care?
Because I was possibly going to buy him down the road. I wanted him to still be 5.5.
Dog chasing your own tail.
There's going to come a time in January where Danny Ceballos is recalled from his loan and goes back to Real Madrid and you'll still be banging this same drum. It's like, well, here's another week where Ceballos did nothing. Yeah, because he doesn't play for Arsenal anymore.
What was your verdict on the game, Sean?
That will remain a secret until we do Scoundrel of the Week.
Oh yeah, interesting. Oh, yes. Let's get to that. Just any more match verdicts you have since before we get to the Scoundrel of the Week?
Okay, so we've got, as I said earlier, about Timo Pukki being the second best striker in world football at the moment. Number one is Tammy Abraham. The verdict from Chelsea's 5-2 demolition of Wolverhampton Wanderers was Tammy triple whammy.
Ooh.
Just one brief word, the unsung hero of Chelsea season, the one to turn it around, I think, is our own Mark Farley, who had Tammy Abraham in his fantasy team, however briefly, and decided to sell him the day before he embarked on this seven goals in 3 games.
It was quite phenomenal. No, he'd gotten 2, I think, already. It was only 2 games ago. I bought Mason Mount. Mount did get a goal and kind of got an assist, but wasn't given for one of Abraham's goals. So it's not the biggest disaster I've ever had in the history of fantasy football, but it's definitely up there.
Yeah.
It was like the first person I bought Mount as an investment so that he'd go up in price and I could sell him because I was playing my wild card. Did that, bought Abraham, then sold Abraham and bought Mount back.
Yeah.
And I definitely backed the wrong horse.
And for any Chelsea fans listening, you can now be sure that Tammy Abraham's scoring run is going to end because I now have him in my fantasy team.
Oh, so very good. I condemned Tammy Abraham to never... To quote my tweet was, Tammy Abraham will never score for Chelsea. And that was just after he missed his penalty against Liverpool in the Super Cup. Because I just thought he was going to be Lukaku. His confidence was going to be shot. But the man, I'm telling you, he's got a head on them shoulders.
Yeah, and some of them goals against, one in particular against Wolves, was a very, like, it wasn't just, oh, Tammy Abraham's on the end of crosses or Tammy Abraham's getting a tap in here. He created that goal out of nothing for himself.
It was, I think it was Connor Cody was like bodying him up. Yeah. And he was like, okay, you're not there.
Just got it turned and just
passed.
Yeah.
Brilliant goal. To go on to Bournemouth's 3-1 victory over Everton. I did an article on Fabian Delph and how he was a...
You weren't expecting that to go into this weekend.
Oh yeah. A one-man wrecking crew.
Wrecking his own team.
Now listen. Now to be fair, Everton were 1-0 at the time, and Delph went a bit too late into a challenge, got a yellow, and then proceeded to just lambast his team with various expletives. And it seemed to light a fire under their arses. I mean, they got the goal just before half time. My good friend Dominic Calvert-Lewin with the goal, but. Second half wasn't great.
Burrell Delph was the man that instigated their whole downfall.
Like, you know, you build your team up and you're the one to let them down, Fabian, by go, like, the ball's coming in. Why are you going out with your left foot? I don't understand. It's the wrong foot. You're standing on your right foot, which is the one that's facing the goal.
Yeah, so anyone who asked me this, was it a Fraser free kick?
Yeah, so they took it quickly on the edge of the box. And Fraser just decided
coming
to just
from the left wing, just whip
just
it
to
in.
Whip it. So Delph is on the front post. The only foot that you can go for to actually get a decent contact on it is with your right foot. You're a professional. You're 29 years of age, Fabian. You've been playing professional football now for 13 years. You should know this by now. You're in England. You've captained your country, England, and they're quite good at football.
That's a conversation for another day.
I know that says more about England than it does Fabian Delph. Just swing with the opposite foot. He doesn't. He goes with his left foot, the wrong foot. It diverts past Jordan Pickford and Everton have no chance of winning thereafter. We've got one more. And it's for Manchester United's 1-0 victory over Leicester in the Harry Maguire derby.
The big one.
12-yard bandits. That's what they are. 12-yard bandits. United are going to get results this season just by virtue of getting a penalty in every single match.
It is funny that you look 5 games into the season, a load of mad shit has happened. All the predictions we've had from before the start of the year. It's one of those things. I'd never actually looked at the Premier League table because you don't really pay attention to it in the first couple of weeks. You know, you start looking at around October, but 5 games in already, the top 6, Liverpool, Man City, Tottenham, Man United, Leicester and Chelsea. And then Arsenal are 7th on goal difference, like, you know, 3rd to 7th are all tied on points. It's exactly as, I'd say that's going to be your top 7 now to the end of the season.
Just, you can almost guarantee, just blow the top, it up now, I'm telling
you. The top 11 might, I think, have one more team to, you know, you could see Wolves or Aston Villa or someone rallying and getting into that top 11. Aside from that, we might as well call the whole thing off.
I think there's going to be some variation, I reckon, but there's not going to be much.
No.
Yeah, blow it up now. Liverpool haven't won anyway, so what are we doing this for? What are we doing this whole podcast for? Liverpool are going to win the Premier League.
Yeah, but you know what we'd always have? A scoundrel of the week. First nominee, I'm nominating him, David Luiz. If he wins, David Luiz has already won. We've had, what, 2 scoundrels of the week so far? 3 maybe. David Luiz has won one. He's been nominated, I'd say, nearly every week. I think we nearly need to rename the award after him. Call it the David Luiz Scoundrel of the Week Award.
I wouldn't have any complaints with that, really.
Yeah, like, there's no way you could say a word against that, really.
Yeah, I'm going to nominate Firmino for his previously discussed satin boots.
Second nomination for Scoundrel of the Week for Firmino. Both of them have been...
For the right reasons.
For ridiculous pieces of skill. Which we always encourage.
I told everybody that they were to wait for my verdict on the Arsenal-Watford match until this moment. I'm sorry if you fell off your seat from sitting on the edge of it for so long. It's going to be right hand 2, left hand 1. Matteo Guendouzi is my scoundrel of the week.
So what did Guendouzi do for anyone who hasn't...
He got taken out. He was a bit feisty in that match.
He got in a row just before half time as well.
But he got taken off in about the 67th minute, and the Watford fans must have been at him,
giving him guff,
giving him guff and grief.
Probably deserved guff as well.
Listen, opposition.
I like
opposition
Guendouzi or Guendouzi. Oh, Guendouzi.
Guendouzi.
Guendouzi, Guendouzi.
I like him as a player, but if I support a team that he's playing against, vitriol is coming your way, yeah, pal. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles. He then proceeded to use his hands to say 2-1 in order to allude to the scoreline. And then David Luiz happened.
So Guendouzi is both your match verdict, central to your match verdict, and also nominated for Scoundrel of the Week.
Yes.
Fabian Delph has to be nominated for his one-man wrecking show.
He absolutely is. Just, Fabian, sometimes, I know you're trying to set the tone, but please tone it down.
I have Samuel Umtiti written down here, and I just realised he should not be nominated for Scoundrel of the Week.
No, he should not. Samuel Umtiti did nothing wrong. It's the lads who robbed his gaff.
Jordan Barcelona game.
So Samuel Umtiti's been injured all season, but he went over to France duty. He thought he was grand. He wasn't. Came back, and I think he was even more injured. I don't know. Even if he didn't train, he just came back and he was more injured. Anyway, so he was just watching the match with his chums, his Barcelona chums. 5-2 win, not too bad. You'll take that. Happy days. Returns to the Umtiti residence, only to find out that a couple of lads, could be women, God knows, a couple of ne'er-do-wells had broken into his house. And not only had they broken into his house, robbed several valuables, but they also cracked open the safe and feasted on the goo inside, whatever the goo was. So my Scoundrel of the Week nominee number 3, 4, whatever it may be, is those slags that robbed Sammy Umtiti's gaff.
Look, that's what he gets for keeping goo in a safe. Who are we going with, lads?
I don't know. It's a tough one.
It's a tough one. Like, Guendouzi for me sticks out. Yeah. But the fact that Watford then tweeted out that in an attempted banter typifies the thing I was talking about earlier on, which is football clubs sticking their nose where it shouldn't be, which is in that sort of nonsense. Because it's just, he's going to go and beat Watford now in the home tie, and he'll tweet at Watford.
He might not,
going,
though.
Yeah. He'll do it in 4 years. Arsenal, but I think he deserves it. Or is it David Luiz?
We can't give it to David Luiz every mark, despite your best efforts. Yeah.
And plus, this is also, if Guendouzi does win it, then David Luiz's grubby paw prints are all over his award. Because... Yeah. Guendouzi would have been vindicated in his little show against the Watford fans, but David Luiz happened.
Yeah, let's give it to Guendouzi.
Let's give it to Guendouzi.
Well done, Guendouzi. Matteo.
Guendouzi. We're about to chat about the Irish players. We have a roundup of how all the Irish players got on in the Premier League and Championship. Gary is furiously looking through his notes here that he's kept on what was actually a stellar weekend for us. But first of all, let's hear from your chat with Michael Owen last week.
And kind of coming towards the end of your career, you spoke very openly about it in the book and in the past as well, about how you felt that your body was just kind of letting you down. You had to kind of adjust your game and couldn't utilise your pace and other parts like that. How tough was that for you, being a player who reached the top of the game so young and so quickly, to then, as your career went on, you just couldn't do what your body just couldn't do what your mind was telling you to do anymore?
Well, that's a hard thing, and that's, you know, something that you have to sort of live with and try to adjust. I'm not the only player that sort of had to change the game. I think of, you know, loads of players really that have, they're different players at the end of the season, at the end of their career, as they are at the start. But mine in particular, when I was so reliant on one thing, I think when I summed myself up, you know, okay, I was decent at this, this and this, but the real two things that I was, you know, that got me to the top was my pace and my coldness, I guess, in front of goal, my finishing ability. So they were the two things I had. The goals, the finishing ability stayed. But the problem is my speed was going and going quite rapidly. So I just had to turn into a goal scorer and just had to, you know, stay in and around the edge of the box and score goals, which disappoints me now. I mean, I'm proud to have stayed at the top of the game for so long, even being, you know, having had the injuries. But You know, the thing that disappoints you now is if you meet people of a certain age and they only remember me for the certain last few years of my career and just think I was a goal scorer, which obviously in my mind I was more than that. And that was the thing that really hurt me mentally, that I couldn't do what I used to be able to do.
It's one of the things, when I was reading the book, one of the things I found remarkable was that your relentlessness in that the second, even though you did achieve so much so young, the second it was done, you were like, okay, what's the next thing? I suppose the one that really stood out for me was when you received the Ballon d'Or at Anfield and you were thinking, let's just get it off the pitch and I want to go out and score a goal against Derby. Looking back now, do you think maybe you, would you have preferred to maybe like smell the roses a little bit, I suppose, and kind of dwell on those moments and enjoyed them more at the time?
I just think the average players do that. I think if you've not got that sense of, you know, urgency, I couldn't wait for the people to get off the pitch and just take that Ballon d'Or, take that trophy and just quick, get off. I've got to, you know, I've got to score here, type of attitude. And of course I wanted to win the Ballon d'Or. I wanted to win all trophies, but that didn't stop me once I had achieved it thinking, what's next? You know, I've got to win that again. I've got to do that again. And, you know, the people that do something remarkable and then all of a sudden spend 3, 4, 5 weeks, you know, celebrating and patting themselves on the back and saying, look how good I was and what I did there and whatever. You know, there's probably been about 10 trophies to have been won in the meantime by the time they're back focusing on what they've got to do. So, no, it's all about the next thing. You've got to win something and then you've got to go and win the next one.
I just want to touch briefly on something that it was something you kind of mentioned in the book as well. When you broke into the Liverpool team and the England squad as well, you were a young player and you was kind of a very clear hierarchy within the squad. If you were kind of afraid to put the nose out of places of any of the senior guys. And even after a couple of years when you'd won a couple of golden boots and you were doing all these things, you kind of still felt you were a few rungs below the other guys on the team. Is that something that's kind of changed now in the modern game with young players coming through? They're obviously... you had to wait a bit for your contract when you broke into the team. They're getting paid so early now that they just kind of, they feel, not maybe a God-given right, but they feel they're immediately up with senior members of the team.
I definitely think so. I think you're right. I think it's not just football, though. It's life. You know, people have got, you know, feel a bit more entitled now earlier than they ever did. You know, people turn up in a brand new car when they, you know, haven't even played their first game. I mean, personally, I was brought up to earn your stripes and then you can do it. You know, I would be embarrassed to drive in a brand new car having not kicked a ball in the first team. Or, you know, I think there was a part in the book where David Beckham was I think his wife was expecting me to almost stick up for him in a way, but I just felt, you know, I'm the kid in the dressing room. I'm almost, you know, I've not got a voice yet. You know, give me another 2-3 years and I can have an opinion, but at the minute I'm just the, you know, the apprentice, so to speak. And okay, I was doing well, scoring goals, but still, you know. And there was another part of the book whereby Wayne Rooney chipped the goalkeeper and I just couldn't, you know, he was only 17 or 18 in the first training session with England. It was almost like I had to look away. It was just, okay, we can all try that, but when you're 17, I almost thought you got to earn your stripes a bit first. And it was just seeing a young kid that was just so, you know, confident and cheeky in many ways was amazing. I could do it on a Saturday against people, but in training I'd be very respectful and in and around the training ground. So yeah, I just think it's one, the way you're brought up, but two, definitely the world is changing. You know, youngsters demand respect far earlier than they ever did now, I suppose, and you know, there's less of a hierarchy, certainly at football clubs.
Gary, your childhood hero growing up, it must have been amazing to finally meet him.
Yeah, I was a bit starstruck, all right. He was my idol from the ages of about 4 to 8. It was a bit weird. Like, yeah, he was like, Michael Owen gets a lot of stick, but he was actually, I thought he was a nice fellow. Sean was there as well.
He's a very nice man.
Yeah,
very
we were
nice
there. It was man. Just us that was there. It was an exclusive interview. So I thought he was a nice lad. You know, we put a couple of clips up from social media over the last few days and there was people, the hatred, the vitriol being directed at Michael Owen. Like, I don't understand why he incites such hate.
I think Liverpool fans hate him because he made that move to United after leaving Newcastle. Newcastle fans hate him just for everything he did at Newcastle. I think United fans, like, don't, like, that was a period of time when they had, like, the amount of great strikers that they had at that period of time, like, you can't go like, oh, who's your favourite United player? Oh, Michael Owen. Yeah, it just doesn't
United
happen.
United fans loved him just because they pissed off Liverpool fans so much.
That's true, but like, even now, like, you're thinking, what, 10 years since that happened, no United fans thinking back, jeez, remember the great days when we had Owen coming on for the last 30 minutes and struggling to run
against Wolfsburg or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, like, and what, Stoke? Yeah, you can't really include Stoke. Real Madrid hate every great player that they've ever had, and they're not gonna like Michael Owen for scoring 8 goals in
Man
a season.
Won a Ballon d'Or. Like, it's easy to forget he won the Ballon d'Or.
See, but that's the thing. Like, I'm not disputing how great a player he was and his pomp, but I can completely understand why, like, the fans of the clubs that he played for don't like him. You know,
I have to admit, yeah, when he went to United that time, I felt betrayed, but I've softened to it in the intervening years. I think you can kind of just accept it for what it was.
Yeah,
and when you read his book, he actually says it was either that or Sunderland. So I wouldn't wish Sunderland on anyone.
But he could have just doubled down on how much Newcastle fans truly hated him. Just like, actually, yeah. You know what?
Gary, I was paying close attention on Saturday afternoon to how the Irish lads are getting on, in the Premier League especially, and we were having a great day. Catch us up on everything that's happened, both in terms of the Premier League and the Championship, because we had a few goals, a few assists, and Darren Randolph is the world's greatest goalkeeper, and I want to hear more about it.
Well, I think the Darren Randolph fact is well established at this stage anyway, but... yeah, we definitely, it was a decent enough weekend. I suppose the one letdown was the Sheffield United lads. Egan McGoldrick Stevens all started, but they lost 1-0 to Southampton. It wasn't their best game. Robinson still has that bit of a tight hamstring that had him and that affected him and the international break. So he only played 5 minutes off the bench. But the big winner was Jeff Hendrick with his heroics.
We spoke about this last week.
I think you should say heroic.
Yes. I don't know, you missed Sean. We were out. We discussed last week.
I was there.
Oh, you were here?
Yeah. Maybe it just wasn't as memorable as it for you as it was for me, Mark. But,
I'm sorry. Yeah, for anyone who didn't listen last week, we discussed how the length of Jeff Hendrick's hair is exactly comparable to how well he performs on the pitch. And it's proven to be yet again. What a strike.
Yeah, what a goal. And last minute equaliser as well. He only played half an hour off the bench, but by all accounts, he played really well when he came on. But the goal is... It was great to see him score, but at the same time, will frustrate the hell out of you because it's the exact type of thing that we want to see him doing for Ireland, and we never actually do. He was in the middle of the pitch, dropped a bit deeper to get the ball off the Burnley centre half, turned, played a positive forward pass, incisive pass, sprinted up for, up forward, got the return and blended in from 30 yards. So, great goal, but frustrates the hell out of you that he doesn't do it more often. Shane Duffy was back in the Brighton team for that game after being dropped against Man City. He did okay. Aaron Connolly came off the bench. I know Sean's a big fan of Aaron Connolly, as we found
there's
out.
There's another man with a strong set of locks right there.
Yeah,
that man's hair, slick.
His hair is nice. Adam Ida on the bench for Norwich. He didn't play, but worth noting. First time he's made the match day squad for the Premier League as well. So he was part of that famous win over Pep Fraudiola's Man City.
How did Troy Parrott get on? Don't answer that. Maurizio Pochettino, don't think I forgot about you. I don't care if your team won 4-0. You're a snake.
Matt Doherty back for Wolves as well. Got himself an assist in a sort of a way in that the Wolves goal came from a deflected or from a rebound from a Doherty shot.
He only played 35 minutes because he's obviously still carrying that injury.
If that game had gone on 10 more minutes, I'd say it would have ended up 5-all.
I'd say it would have been 7-5.
We were sitting here in the office being like, could they? Is it going to happen? But
I thought when it went to 4-2, I was like, and then just sort of reefing at my collar in that kind of, I don't know what's going on here. And then Mason Mount just popped up and scored, which is amazing as well on a completely separate note. That Chelsea, none of their experienced players like to score anymore.
Every player that scored for Chelsea is
English
someone
from their academy.
Yeah, from their academy. This season. Literally every player. Tommy Abraham, Mason Mount,
Fikayo Tomori.
Tomori, and is that it?
That's it.
Great for him in a way, but you get a feeling it probably won't last.
Anyway, enough about the young English guns. What about the Irish lads? Anyone else in the Premier League?
No, that's really our lot in the Premier League. Shane Long came off the bench for like 30 seconds. in their win at Sheffield United. That's about it, really.
In the Championship, I was watching Soccer Saturday, and Matt Murray uttered the words, "This is Reading versus Darren Randolph." The Reading goalkeeper has actually stood up and applauded Randolph after yet another incredible save.
Yeah, he had, by all accounts, he was absolutely on fire. He made four or five outrageous saves. Unsurprisingly, got into the Championship Team of the Week for his efforts. Man of the match in that one as well. So you're obviously going to be impressed with that. But he wasn't the only man in the Championship Team of the Week this week. We also had...
I hope there was 10 other players. Yeah.
The only Irish man. Sorry, lads. Derek Williams got in.
Derek Williams got in an all-Irish 2-0 win for Blackburn.
Yeah, and he scored an absolute screamer in that game from centre-back as well. So, yeah, we have three Irishmen in that defence. Daryl Lenehan and Greg Cunningham both got an assist as well in the two goals. So, by all accounts, flying. And with Enda Stevens now out of the Georgia game due to suspension, that left back spot, I think
it's wide open, but for anybody that is not Greg Cunningham. Poor Greg has been a solid Championship left back for what seems like an eternity, and it was because he played for Man City's under 23s once and he got three caps from it. And ever since he became an actual first team player at a relatively high level, every Ireland manager's been like, nah, we're grand. We'll play Stephen Ward there.
Yeah.
Forever. If not, we'll play Conor Howrahan there. Like,
yeah, where does the Howrahan thing at left back come out of? I don't know.
To be fair to him, he now seems to be playing better than ever. So, yeah. I don't know, maybe even the next squad. But another option at left back, we're flowing with left backs, lads. Ryan Manning, a QPR, is now a left back.
What?
Ryan Manning is a left back, Mark. Yes, he's only played left back this season. They won at the weekend. 3-2 against Luton. He played left back. He had played really well. So I don't know. Maybe Ryan
James Collins got a goal in that as well.
Well, that probably is going to be next time. James Collins is the man.
Collins looks like he's got that Chris Wood feel of him,
yeah.
Of a man, of a lad who's at minor age still playing under 14s. Like the goal they got against Bulgaria during the week was brilliant. Like his actual control. First up, if you're trying to say to someone, show them a clip of like what do we mean by, we say, a striker, a lone striker up front holding the ball up and dragging others into the play, was exactly that. And he's carried it on again into
I was really impressed with him when he came on against Bulgaria. He's definitely better than Scott Hogan anyway.
Poor Scott Hogan. Can I just interject for one moment? I've never seen a man so sad to get an assist. Like, I was watching the match and he obviously meant to score. He instead diverted it backwards towards Alan Brown, who just tapped it in. But, like, everybody ran over to Brown. That's his first international goal. Everybody's delighted for him. Scott, I'm sure, was delighted for him, but just everything said, why can't I poxy score? Like, he was just...
I have a few ideas why he might not be able to.
He just stood behind the goal and just was like... contemplated, I think, everything in that brief moment. And I just want to say, Scott, I'm here for you, man. I'm here for you. And I believe in him, because I was actually really impressed when he came on against Switzerland, as I'll say, till the cows come home. But, yeah, Jesus, poor Scott.
Because the backup striker spot is wide open. McGoldrick is going to be playing up front, obviously. And you don't wonder why when you see the way he's played for Ireland. But I don't know what more James Collins can do now at this stage.
Maguire banging in goals.
Maguire too, yeah. But just on Collins, 5 goals this season, including the one he scored for Ireland. He scored in 4 consecutive games. He scored 20 goals in 2019. Now, I know half of that was in League One, but he's also scored 4 goals in the Championship already.
The thing about goals and their nets and the bar and the posts, they're the same at every level.
Yep.
Know what I mean?
And Sean Maguire as well got a great goal for Preston. They bet Brentford 2-0. Alan Brown was captain of Preston yet again. He's at 23 years of age. Or I think he might have just turned 24 in the last couple of weeks, but that's impressive. So,
Alan Brown, I think, has been 24 ever since he moved over as an 18-year-old. I feel that way. I don't know why I ended up watching the playoff final when they were in the League One playoff final and Jermaine Beckford was playing up top for them. But Alan Brown was there and I think he looked older back then. And that was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
He's been the next big thing since, I'd say, around the time of Jack Charlton's Ireland team. I've just been constantly waiting for Alan Brown to solidify his play, starting place in that team. And that's not any, like, look, that's not a criticism in any way. It just shows you how important he's been to Preston for so many years already, and the fact that he's still at such a young age.
To be fair, he was on fire for the first half of last season, and then he got a pretty bad injury that missed a couple of months, and then he never really got back to it before the end of the season. But by all, he's playing well this season. You know, he's captained them in a few games. The just one other one in the championship that caught the eye was Jason Malumbi finally started from Millwall on loan from Brighton, played full 90 minutes.
You can't see this, everyone, but I'm fist pumping. Not only is he a lovely young lad, but he's just a brilliant footballer.
And he's lovely hair.
He's lovely hair, and he's just a lovely way about him, and he plays football in a lovely way until he's tackling lads just that tiny bit late and just to set the tone. He's a lad who sets the tone.
We need a few more of them in the Ireland.
I'll tell you what. He has a tattoo of a huge number 8 on his back because that's exactly where he plays. And that's exactly how he plays.
Yeah, you just hope. Yeah, because Millwall, let's be fair, they're a middling poor championship team. So you wonder why he's not getting in more often. But then when you talk about the type of foot player he is, he doesn't really seem suited to championship. But a team that he actually would seem suited to is the Brighton team, which he is a player. He is a Brighton player.
Have about 400 of them types of players, though. Yeah, but Trossard is out injured now as well, so there's
Jason Malumbi, though. I think if assuming Potter is still there this time next year, I wouldn't be surprised if Jason Malumbi is
if he's given chances to Aaron Connolly, and they do, like, it's not to say that they don't have decent players. Like, they have Jahan Bash, who top scorer in the Dutch league 2 seasons ago. Like, he's not exactly a bad player, just hasn't showcased it in the Premier League. But instead of utilising here,
was that lad a bit Alfonso Alves that played for Middlesbrough?
Yeah, like, you're top scorer in the Dutch league. Yeah. You know, you could only be Ruud van Nistelrooy or Alfonso
Luis
Alves
Suarez.
Yeah, like, he is towards that side. But I think it's just testament to how much he values the likes of I think there's another lad as well, another young fella that plays for Brighton as well on the wing that he trusts as well, Dutch fella. And if Malumbi just he could step into that midfield, not every first team match, but also I think in that Millwall team, Sean Williams is older than everybody thinks he is. Like, he's 33 now,
and he's out of the team half time too.
Exactly, because he can't move. Like, Malumbi, if there's one thing I can say about him, he can move. I've seen him move.
Well, any other Irish players catch your eye, Gary, or is that it?
No, that's really our lot. And
I suppose commiserations to poor James McLean and Scott Hogan, who are part of that Stoke team that are just
James
looking
McLean,
like they're bound to get relegated.
James McLean started, Scott Hogan didn't. He came on, but that's pretty much our lot. So I think I'm looking forward to this quiz, Mark, because I've been sitting on the edge of my seat for the entire podcast just waiting for it. So
let's do it. Right, lads, this is a very special Liverpool versus Chelsea themed quiz in honour of the fact that Liverpool are playing Chelsea this weekend coming in the Premier League. Straight in front of me, I've got Sean Meehan, diehard Chelsea fan. To my left, I've got Gary Connaughton, diehard Liverpool fan. Who won the quiz last week?
False equivalencies, but anyway. Yeah.
Who won the quiz again last week?
Sean Trounstroyd.
I remember that. Yeah, absolute hammering. So Gary, although you've won two, you've got two quiz wins to Sean's one so far in the series. One over Sean, one over Maris. This is your chance to get back ahead again of Sean.
Yeah,
but
Sean pegged me back last week. I wasn't happy.
We're going to go back to the day that Liverpool cost themselves the Premier League. That 2-0 defeat to Chelsea in 2014. And
still
I'm going
hurts.
To turn to
still
you,
hurts.
Gary. And I'm going to ask you to name the Liverpool starting team from that day. You get 11 guesses. You get one guess per position.
Okay.
You get a point for everyone you get right. You get minus a point for everyone you get wrong.
Yeah, that's the killer, you see.
Well, it doesn't make a difference, actually, because it just means you have to guess, basically, for each one.
Okay, right. So, am I going, ready to go? In goal, Simon Mignolet.
Yes.
Objection. Simon.
Right. I don't know. Do I need to get their exact position?
No. Just okay. Back four. So.
Back four of John Flanagan.
Yes.
Glenn Johnson.
Yes.
Martin Skrtel.
Yes.
And Daniel Agger.
Wrong answer.
Oh, no. Oh, right.
And you're not allowed to guess any more defenders. You have to move on to midfield. That's the way the game plays. You only get one guess per position.
Of course, the man himself, Steven Gerrard.
Yes.
Raheem Sterling.
Raheem Sterling played, yes.
Jordan Henderson didn't play because he was suspended.
Oh, you're very lucky there.
Because he was suspended. Okay, can I guess two strikers?
You can jump on the strikers if you want, yeah.
Suarez and Sturridge.
Sturridge did not start that game.
Right, so how many players do I have to get? How many guests do I have?
I'll try to. You moved on to six with Suarez. You got another minus one for Sturridge. So you've gotten two wrong so far. You've gotten one, two, three, four. So you've guessed seven correctly so far. You've gotten two wrong. So you only have two more guesses. So the most you can get, we'll get rid of the minus points. We'll just say
okay.
You get 11 guesses. The most you can get is nine, but you cannot guess any more strikers. You're now confined to just midfielders.
I'm actually drawing a blank. I'm sure. Who else was there in that team?
I'm going to put a clock on you. You've got, I'm going to say, 10 seconds.
Oh, left. 10 seconds. Right. You see, Ali Sissoko.
Wrong answer.
Oh, Jesus.
One guess left.
Joe Allen.
Joe Allen, yes.
Big Joe Allen.
8 points out of a possible 11.
Who did I miss?
You missed Philippe Coutinho.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
You missed Lucas Leiva.
Oh, I always forget Lucas and these sort of things as well.
And you missed Sacco.
Sacco. I had it in my head. I thought it might have been Sissoko that played that pass to Gerrard, but now I remember it was Sacco.
So right. They were the lads that started Sturridge and Iago Aspas, of course.
Yeah, I remember Aspas came on. I knew he didn't start. And I remembered Henderson was suspended.
That's all well and good. But if there's one thing I can remember from that match was just how ragtag the Chelsea team was.
Yeah, in fairness, that is one thing I remember as well. So
you have a score of 8 to beat Sean. You've got 11 guesses.
7 of the players I probably don't even know. Alright, in goal, Mark Schwarzer.
That was the tricky one to start off with, but he got it right. That's 1 point to Sean.
Thomas Kalas playing the back.
Oh, he looked at it, he's like, oh, this is a right.
Yeah, because I remember the ones that are just out there. Ashley Cole.
Ashley Cole played, yes. He's 3 from 3 so far. He's getting into the swing of things.
John Terry.
John Terry didn't play. Don't be silly.
Pressure's on now.
Right back, yeah, Jesus.
3 from 4.
Jesus. Right back. Azpilicueta.
Please. If you want to pull him up, I'm pronouncing players' names.
Cesar Azpilicueta. Cesar Dave Azpilicueta.
No, Cesar Azpilicueta. Yes. You've got 4 from 5.
Demba Ba played.
Demba Ba did Demba play. You've jumped way on, but
yeah,
I'll give you that.
I needed to get Demba Ba in there.
Oh, you forgot about him.
Willian did not play.
He came off the bench, did he?
He did come off
the
bench.
He scored the second.
Yeah.
5 from 7. Jesus,
you can't get,
I've
you can't
got
afford
one
to get
bit of leeway though. Lampard.
Lampard did play.
Oh, I didn't think he would have played. Interesting.
Yeah, I know.
You're on to 6.
John Obi Mikel.
John Obi Mikel, you're on to 7.
Oh
no. Right, so I've got 2 left.
You've got two guesses left.
Got 2.
And you've got 2 to win, 1 to draw.
Oh my god! Right, let me.
You're all right though, because who did you guess again? That was wrong. You guessed.
I guessed
Willian?
Terry and Willian.
So you can't guess any more defenders.
I can't guess any more defenders. I presume that the two left are well. Yeah, so midfielders.
Midfielders slash strikers.
Strikers.
They were playing 4-3-3, weren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. Hazard.
Hazard, no.
No, alright. So
now all you can do is draw.
Jesus.
Oh, I think I might know two of them.
I thought Sean was going to walk this.
No. Jesus Christ, no.
You need extra time to think when Gary was trying to name his team.
Oh yeah, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, no, to be honest, I was like, who was the man who played centre half? Kalas. Jesus, is it hot in here, lads?
I'm going to have to put a, put a timer
like,
in
so
you
you've
well.
Got Mikel, you've got Oscar.
Oscar? No!
Can I have a couple of guesses?
Yeah, Gary, you've won this quiz.
Was one of them Marco Marin?
No, it wasn't.
Was there a certain curly-haired Egyptian player playing for Chelsea?
There was a certain curly-haired Egyptian player starting.
Bastard. I remember him playing. I thought Marco Marin was playing.
So we call it off. Sean, you've lost this quiz. Gary Winslow is scoring of
the 8-7. Cahill
didn't play. So you had Mark Schwartz in goal, a back four of Cesar Azpilicueta, Ashley Cole, Johnny Mikel and Callas. Sorry, not Ivanovic and Callas. Ivanovic, obviously, Sean. Then you had a midfield of Matic, Lampard.
Matic,
Lampard, and Andre Schurrle. Sorry, and Mikel. And then you had Andre Schurrle, Salah, and Demba Ba is their front three.
Did Marco Marin come off the bench?
No, Mark Marin has a podcast. Marco Marin was a figment of your imagination. He lasted for about 5 minutes at Chelsea and disappeared back to Germany or some spot again.
I think he was on loan at like Anderlecht. And
I swore he played in that game.
Your bench was Torres, Van Ginkel, Willian, Gary Cahill, Nathan Aki, Hilario and Baker. Lewis Baker was on the bench 5 years ago.
This is what I mean, right? It's like, I went for players that like... I got Callas and Suarez. Yeah. That's I'm happy enough to get them. But fucking Salah. Do you remember when Salah played for Chelsea? No, you don't.
The only reason I know that is because I've seen a video of him celebrating that Demba Ba goal. But.
Lads, we have to go. I can't believe it. I really thought Gary's going to win this. I had another one. I started making a quiz. I have another one, right? But before, actually, we'll go right after this, right? I'm going to give you a chance to redeem yourself a little bit.
But I still win.
Yeah. You still win. Don't worry.
Just for fun. The Chelsea at Liverpool mad 2009 Champions League double leg quarter final. In the first game, Chelsea won, was it 3-1 they won? Off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember now. But anyway, a Chelsea player scored a brace that day. Who scored it?
Ivanovic.
Gary's gotten it ahead of Chelsea fan Sean.
Again, can we just say, this is all well and good, but I'm not a Chelsea fan, really. I'm a Pats fan.
And I think Mason scored an own goal.
And in the second leg, what Chelsea player got a brace?
Lampard.
Yeah, Gary has wiped the floor with you this week. Absolutely wiped it. He's taken the mop out, he's got the bucket, he's soaked it in some Sean, and then just started scrubbing.
I'm back.
Anyway, lads,
there's nothing I can say to that. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for listening, lads. Thanks for taking part. Sean, I hope you're embarrassed and ashamed, but next week we'll have a chance to redeem yourself once
again. If it's a Pats quiz, I'll have you. Yeah, if it's I'd a Pats Liverpool quiz, I'll have you.
But there's no more time for quizzes this week. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back again next week. If this is your first time listening to the show, please do subscribe. You can find us by searching Football and Balls.de or by searching Balls.de podcast on all good podcast apps. If you're already subscribed, please do rate and review the show. It would mean a lot to us. And obviously check out all the other content that we've got coming up online this week, which is absolutely enormous. We've got so much coming between the Rugby World Cup, between the fallout from the Ireland final, between Liverpool Chelsea coming this weekend as well. There's lots happening, so be sure to check out Balls.de, check out the Balls.de podcast feed. But until next week, mind yourself.
I just got up off the treatment bed and walked back to his room. And as he was walking back to his room, Roy was just shouting down the corridor, "You're a fucking prick. You've been all your life."
I've never heard so much rubbish in my life. Why do we have to listen to that garbage? It's just utter nonsense what he's talking about.
The only thing that they have got is the big boy up front, Sigurdsson, who really, Sig Thorsson.
Oh my word.
So where is his record?
Has he achieved anything?
20 years ago?
Well, it would be a long time.
25 years ago? Why are we going for him, John?
I mean, what's he going to do with all his Irish jerseys now? Is he take them together and burn them? A collection of Irish jerseys. What does he do with them? And there he goes and puts on a white jersey.
And of course, Celtic.
I agree with you.
Ronnie just wants to say the word Schweinsteiger. Bastian Schweinsteiger.